Hello?
Can you hear me, Joel?
Hello, yes.
You can actually hear me this time.
I can hear you now, yeah.
This is what it did to me last time when I had Manu. It took me like 15 minutes to get it to work.
Oh, that's bad, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to be giving them a piece of my mind. So,
yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just saying that too. I said, I guess if they can't provide the service correctly, I'd be pissed.
Yeah, so sorry about holding you up because I'm sure that you've got other stuff to do besides talk to me.
No, that's fine.
Okay, well, I guess just get started. So I don't even think it recorded me at all because it said I was on the air, but yet you weren't hearing me. So I don't think that I got recorded. So I said a whole bunch of nice stuff about your acting credits and producer credits and writer credits and director credits. And I mentioned how you've got like 385 credits. And so we'll just kind of get into it, I guess. So you started in like what, 1985?
I did Super 8 stuff in the 70s. Like 1972, my dad bought me a Super 8 camera. But, yeah, it all kind of graduated from 1972 doing Super 8s and then through the 70s through, like, 77, 78 is when I actually met Tim Ritter when he was, like, 8 years old, him and his sister. His mom had me watch them when his mom and dad were at work. I would watch them. I don't call it babysitting because they were older. They weren't babies. They were, like, 8 years old. So
right.
I watched them through the 70s. And then I kind of moved away from the area, and I was going to do some stuff with some friends of mine at FEC News with, video. And I ended up moving back to where I was already in West Palm Beach because I was working for FEC News. And then I had an apartment there. And then my nephew, and this was in like 83, I think, called me on the phone, and he goes, hey, there's this kid in my school named Tim Ritter, and he's selling a movie called Day of the Reaper. Is that the same Tim Ritter you used to take care of years ago? And then my nephew Terry from the Love Doctors over in Fort Pierce, he had told me about it, and I go, geez, I don't know. Is there a phone number? And he goes, yeah. So I called him, and I talked to his mom, and I was thinking, like, I'd went way back to the past, and I go, well, is Tim allowed to be up this late? And she's like, he's 17. He's out doing – I go, I forgot completely that, we're here in 1983, not in the past, in the 70s. So she said, yeah. So I said, can you have him call me? And that's when he called me back. I think it was 83 or 84. And we got together right away. And Tim wrote a script called Inner Forces. And I was telling him when he was reading it to me, because he wrote it, and I go, Tim, how are we going to do all this stuff, man? This is a lot. This, we got dragons exploding, and people are exploding, and dragons flying around. And he was, like, really excited about it. He's like, I don't know, but we got to do it, man. And I go, I don't know if we can. And then his mom was kind of like looking at the script. She goes, I don't know if you guys can do this. And this guy, this character wouldn't do this stuff just because you're feeding him Twinkies all day. And we were like, it was a cool story. But Tim was like, he finally kind of gave in and goes, yeah, I don't know how we're going to do this, man. We should do something else. And one of us came up with the idea of doing like short stories. And he goes, well, we got to come up with a name. And I think Tim and I were kind of throwing it back and forth, spitballing. And I think he came up with Twisted, because it's got to be something like with the word twisted in it, like twisted something. And then I was naming some things, and I go like maybe illusions, and he's like, yeah, twisted illusions. And we were like, yeah, that's the name of the movie. And then of course Tim made the company because then when we shot the little shorts, there was there was Minus Dares, Truth or Dare. I don't know. There's like five short stories, I think. And then a wraparound that Tim had already written. And it was all these short stories. And so we went out, shot them all on a video, got with our friend. We didn't know him then. We knew him from Video Extron. And his name was Al Nicolosi. And he worked there. And we were telling him about it. And he goes, hey, I want to get on the bottom floor with you guys doing something here. So he was able to edit at the television studio where he worked at. I believe it was Channel 12. And Tim and I and Al rented out a editing bay to edit all the movies. So first of all, we had to shoot all the shorts, go to the edit bays, edit all this stuff together and everything, then put it together on video. And in the meantime, before that, we went out in our cars, and I helped him sell Day of the Reaper, you know, all over the Palm Beaches and down in Miami and up in Fort Pierce and Port St. Lucie. And then we finally had Twisted Illusions done. It was on a VHS, and we duplicated it, so we had hundreds of the movie. And we made kind of a weird cover for the VHS. It was yellow, and we photocopied it. And then the stores were complaining. They're like, this is black and white. We don't want black and white. And one guy I got in an argument with at Video Extra, and I go, look, man, are you jerking me around? If we come back with a color cover, are you really going to buy it? You're going to jerk me around some more and say you don't want it? Because you already told me you were going to buy a bunch of copies, and now you're not buying them because you don't like the yellow cover because it's black and white. He's like, no, if you bring it back in color, I swear I'll buy four copies. Because I would call all the stores ahead of time and tell them that me and Tim were going to be coming. Give me your order, and I'd get them to get either two or three or four, or maybe, or might have just been one, but a lot of places would duplicate. So I went to a copier place, and they're not as popular now. I mean, they're more popular now than they were then, because you're talking back in 84. And
right.
So then, you know, I'm going to the copy place, and the guy's going, well, if you have color in it, you know, that's going to cost you more, because that's what it was in those days. So I'm like, oh, okay, because the more colors you put into it, I go, well, just give me red and green. And I was thinking more like blood and gore, but people were going, those are Christmas colors, you idiot. And I was like, oh, man, I can't win. But I made the thing. It was I drew a picture of a monster crashing up out of a VCR, and that was the front cover. And then Tim wrote the synopsis for the whole movie on the back, and then we put everybody's names, and Tim typed up the cover and everything. And that was the cover, and I went right to Video Extra, and it was our first stop. And I go, hey, I got your four copies for you. And the guy's looking at it. I go, you told me if it was in color, you were going to buy it. He goes, all right, damn it, I'll buy the thing. So I think we were selling them for like $25 a piece. So he gave us $100, and we left four there. And then so we just went all over with it. And I think Tim, at one point, he sent, or either both of us, or he did, we sent it to, I think Tim did, he sent it to Jeff Miller of Peerless Films in Chicago. And Jeff really, really liked the short story Truth or Dare. So basically, and I was out of the picture because I had moved to Pensacola for a while. And so Tim had actually gone out to Chicago, met with Jeff Miller, and he met everybody out there, Yale Wilson, all the producers and stuff for the big Truth or Dare. And Tim went out and saw the storyboard artist, the guy that would, you know, sketch out the storyboard. And he met Jeff, the executive producer, that's the guy that had all the money. And then before you know it, he was calling me in Pensacola. He goes, hey, man, you want to come back here? He goes, I need you to be the president of Twisted Illusions. And I said, okay, I can come back. But it was like weeks before I could go. And by the time I got back, his dad signed the Twisted Illusions pitch, which made his dad the president at the time. But I still came, you know, I still came back, saw Tim and everything. And he goes, okay, tomorrow there's a production meeting. And I went to the production meeting with him and met Yale and Jeff and everybody. And I remember because Tim said, he goes, I want a scene where the pit bull runs up and jumps up and bites Mike Strauber in the arm, and Mike Strauber's trying to shake him off, and he pulls his chainsaw off and cuts the dog's head off, and as he walks around, the dog's head is always on his arm. He's like, oh, I don't know if we can do that. And he wanted, of course, put Keith Snyder in it from Twisted Illusions. He wanted him to be the lead psycho, and then Jeff was like, oh, I don't have that much money. But that's how it all started, was with that little, you know, that little tiny videotape, sending that off to Peerless Films in Chicago, and then they pretty much gave us, well, they did. They gave us the money to do Truth or Dare, the one in the black video box with the silver letters and the razor blade running through it with the blood running down, and that was really the start of everything we were doing from then. Well, Twisted Illusions was, but Truth or Dare was the bigger one.
Well, sounds like quite an adventure, really. So which one of your movies, and I know you've got a lot of them, but which one would you consider like your breakthrough into getting people to watch your movies, if you understand my meaning?
Yeah, let's see. Well, we did Twisted Illusions, and I did think, and I told Tim this, and he was like, later in life, he's like, yeah, you were wrong. I go, yep, I was. I told him that we had, when Twisted Illusions, we got it out to all these video stores and everything, and I don't know. We at the time, we probably, to begin with, maybe 50, 50 to 100, something like that, to get started. And I was all like, man, this is going to be cool. We did this Twisted Illusions. Everybody's going to know me, and I'm going to go to the flea market next week. Everybody's going to be stopping me and going, hey, Wine Coop, yeah, saw Twisted Illusions. Let me have your autograph. Nobody knew about it. Nobody cared. Nobody knew. Nobody wanted to rent it. Well, no, I mean, people rented it, but it was never like I thought it was going to be. I thought, you know, oh, I'll do Twisted Illusions, and then people are going to recognize this. And Tim was like, hey, we do Truth or Dare, and people will recognize this. It's still, you know, I'll have a lot of people that I can say, I'm doing my next movie or this movie, and they'll be like, yeah, cool, that's cool. But then there's the other people that don't really see a lot of these, and they'll still be like, I have no clue what you're talking about. And that's the stuff. So, yeah, like when you say the movie that got out there, I mean, Truth or Dare, Twisted Illusions is the one you can look back at. Truth or Dare is the one that really started it. But immediately after Truth or Dare, and like I said, we sold that all over, and then Peerless, they were selling it all over. They had all their salespeople on phones calling people, calling the video stores, saying, you got to buy this movie. I was out working for them at the time, you know, going to the video stores and selling them. And then Tim did Killing Spree, and I got a part in Killing Spree. But a lot of this, too, was it was tough because it wasn't all this. There wasn't a lot of distributors then. So Tim and I would jump in our cars, and we went and sold Twisted Illusion, Truth or Dare, Killing Spree, and by that time I had done Lost Faith right after Killing Spree. And we went in our cars, and again, we would start, like in Jupiter, and we'd go all the way down to Miami, and we'd hit every video store that we could see going down US-1. We'd branch off, you know, look for them here and there and stuff. And then we'd get back to Jupiter, and if we had time, we'd go up into Fort Pierce, or, you know, Tim would, it'd be late at night, he'd go home, I'd go home, and then we'd meet back. Now we'd meet up, like, in Stewart, and then we hit all the video stores around there, and we go all the way up, again, US-1, all the way up into Satellite Beach, Cape Canaveral, and just hit every single video store, you know, on the way. Of course, the worst ones were when the people goes, the manager's not here today, but he'll be here tomorrow, and we were like, oh, we're not coming out here tomorrow, this sucks. But we sold a lot of movies between there and there, so then they just started to catch on, because then people were like, and then especially now, because a lot of people look back on Truth or Dare, because, like, Elijah Wood, that was his favorite movie as a kid, and he talks about it in all these big late-night shows, it's like Craig Ferguson and stuff. And then,
right,
and now, what's that?
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just said I've heard him do that.
Yeah. So, I mean, that brings a lot to it now. And then Lost Faith has even picked up that kind of, that little following where people are really like, man, I really love Lost Faith. And I just had a guy write me an email today or yesterday, and he goes, I really love this because it's more about all the blood, sweat, and tears and heart you put into it above the budget, because none of these things really have budget. But they really like that. And then I had released Lost Faith way back in 90, let's see, I shot that thing between 88 and 92 because I went through a divorce right in the middle of it and almost killed myself and everything. But got the movie out in 92, and then, you know, like I said, Tim and I got it all over the place, along with Killing Spree, Truth or Dare, and Twisted Illusions. And I remember the day Tim called me up when I was at my apartment, and he had said, he goes, are you all done with Lost Faith? And I go, yeah. And he goes, are you sure? And I go, yeah, I sold some duplicator. I go, I was just trying to get him to work with me on price and get him to do this stuff. So I told him, I said, well, I'm going to need thousands of these. And I didn't know it, but the guy turned around and he made thousands of them, and I was in debt to him for, like, months. He was calling me, and he's like, I'm going to report you. You told me you needed 1,000. I've got boxes of VHS are stacked all over my production house. You need to come pay me for this. And I was like, oh, my God, where am I going to get this money to buy these movies? And then I had to get labels and front labels and side labels. And then Tim got me the artwork, and he told me on the phone, he goes, get ready, it's $300. And I was like, great. And I went down there to get it, and then the guy met us, and he had done Killing Spree, and the guy goes, okay, it's $3,000. And Tim looked at me, and I looked at him, and he goes, and the guy goes, and then Tim goes, I thought you said 300. And the guy's like, no, 3,000. And then Tim was, like, really apologizing to me. He goes, I'm really sorry, man. He goes, I thought it was 300. And I go, no, that's okay. I said, this is what I'm getting into to get this movie out there. So I actually borrowed the money from my mom, but immediately, I got on the phone, I called every video store everywhere within our radius, from Miami all the way up to Cape Canaveral. I called all of them, and got a day that I told them I would be there, and then and had them dedicate themselves to like three or four copies, because it was also the day it was coming out in the Fort Pierce News Tribune and the Port St. Lucie News and the Stewart News and the Palm Beach Post. We're all running my story about the local guy that's selling his movie Lost Faith at video, and I put all their video store names in there, and I say, if you don't buy these movies from me, you'll be sorry, because everybody's going to hit your video stores at the same time. And they did. It was the best work I ever did to get something out, because it all came out in the newspapers, and they said, well, they read it, and people were at the video store going, I want that movie Lost Faith. And
cool.
And most of them would buy, yeah, most of them bought four copies. They would buy four copies at a time, and I think I was selling them for like 20 apiece. So it always takes a while for, you know, the stuff to catch on. But then when we did Creep, that got us into Fangoria magazine on Notes to the Underground, and that had Creep, Killing Spree, Twisted Illusions, Truth to Dare. You know, it didn't have Lost Faith, because Lost Faith wasn't a horror, it was more martial art. But then it opened up a whole new world to us with the Fangoria, because this magazine is all over the world, and all these horror fans read it. So they're like, oh, these guys, Tim Ritter and Joel Lankin, what are they doing? And then, before that was a little magazine called Independent Video, and I read about a guy named Phil Herman with his movie Burglar from Hell. And I was like, oh, I got to call this guy on the phone and see if he's like us. So I called him up, and he's like, hello? And I'm like, hi, is this Phil Herman? And he's like, yep, it is. And I go, hey, Phil, you don't know me, but my name is Joel Weinkoop, and I'm a filmmaker. Oh, I read about you in Fangoria. And I go, you did? And he's like, yeah, man, Ben thinks you're awesome. He was working for Ben Stansky, a buddy of his, so they're working together. And he goes, we read all about you. And I go, man, I read about you in Independent Video. And I think even then, Phil was like, I read about you in Independent Video, because Independent Video did a big story on Lost Faith. So Phil and I became just the greatest friends, and from that day, Phil and I have been constantly working together on movies. In fact, he's a big part of the Craiglon incident, which is the movie I'm doing now. So it's just a matter, it's how much stuff you've done that you can turn back and look back on, and you never know, you know, who's looking at this movie, or like if they'll go, hey man, I saw you in Come On Ado, have you ever done any other movies? And I'm like, yeah, I've done like another 167 movies besides Clownado, or If It's Crazed, or and then my TV show The Other Side, or beside, you know, Dirty Cop, No Donut. So, and it's always that piece where something clicks for somebody. Somebody might be like, I didn't like Killing Spree, but I really love Creep, or I didn't like Creep, but I really love Killing Spree. So, you know, there's always something there for everybody. The worst thing that can happen, I was in a video store, you know, you remember what video stores were? Remember when there was video stores?
Yes, they still have them.
Yeah, rarely. Not like they did, though. But I was in a video galleries where I got my movies back in 90, I don't know, 6 or something. In the 90s. And I remember because I sold a copy of Killing Spree, or Tim and I did. And I prominently would put it on the video shelf of all the other movies. And the guy's looking, and his girlfriend's there, and she's with him. And she picked up the movie, and she goes, ew, Killing Spree. This looks interesting, honey. And I was standing behind him, and I'm like, ah, cool, they're going to get Killing Spree. This is awesome. The guy takes the box away, and he goes, this is those shitty little B-movies that nobody likes. This movie probably sucks. We're not going to watch that. We're going to get Dawn of the Dead instead. I mean, good call with Dawn of the Dead, but he really shut down Killing Spree. So it's just all those neat things that you can, you look back on, and of course you get, you know, people that are just going to say, oh, these things suck, I hate them, but there's something that gets in your blood, you know, and you just want to keep making these movies, and you just can't stop making them, so it's kind of just pushes you on to keep doing stuff.
Well, you know, a lot of your movie. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were done talking. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was, but I didn't know if I hit the nail on the head there with your question. So I guess it's just a genre realm of what people like. I think your original question was, you know, what do they remember you for, or what movies? So it's a lot of them, because a lot of people will say, like, what's your favorite one? And I'm always like, ah, I can't say the favorite because I really like doing them all. I remember when I did Creep. Tim told me later, we shot a scene, and Tim goes, that's really not what I wanted you to do, but you were having so much fun, I just let you go. And I'm like, oh, thanks, man. So, I mean, it's for the people to say, you know, what, of course, what they like, But then at the same time, they're all different. They all got different storylines. You know, some are bloody, some are horror. But even after, like the last thing Tim and I did together, well, we did Dirty Cop No Donut 2, and then we did, or Dirty Cop No Donut, then of course Part 2, then we did the Alien Agenda Endangered Species, and when I flew to Kentucky and shot that. But when I moved to Tampa, then it's like everybody and his brother is a filmmaker in Tampa, so I started working for like 7 or 8 different guys that had their own movies coming out, like the guys from The Dark Dimensions and Nick Cuddy and John Lewis, and then I was doing a lot of stuff. Like I did Todd Sheets' Clownado. I mean, these are all kind of recent, and then I was in Iowa, and then I was in Indiana, and all these different places to shoot movies and stuff. So it's always something different, and some go more elaborate with the budget, and you're like, oh, cool. It's like Herschel Gordon Lewis of The Auto Show. And not to mention, it was just very cool to be able to work with Herschel Gordon Lewis. And then I met William Griffay, and then I worked with William Griffay on his movie Thumbs, and I introduced him at the Tampa Theater, and did a whole dialogue with him talking about his movies with Stanley and Mako Jaws of Death and all his movies that he'd done back in the day. So, I mean, it's just the more stuff you can do and the more you get out there, and then you just kind of leave it up to people that like your movies. Just like I say, well, one guy, we were in McDonald's, and my wife and I, Kathy, we both do Hollow Scream too, and we were there to get something to eat before we went to Hollow Scream, which is at Busch Gardens. Then we're standing in line, and the guy kind of turned, and I saw him look out of the corner of my eye, out of his eye, but then he turned back away, and then I told my wife, Kathy, I said, I think he recognized us from Hollow Scream, and he's going to say something. And then he turned to me again, and he goes, excuse me, and I go, yeah, and he goes, are you in a movie called Dirty Cop No Donut? And I go, I don't know, it depends if you liked it. He goes, oh, it's my favorite movie. And I go, yeah, then that's the movie. And he's like, oh, I love that movie, I can't believe it, would you sign my receipt? And I was like, sure. I mean, and those things are fun, they happen so very little. It's always, one time we went to the movies here in Tampa, and we went into the AMC, and we were going to see some movie. And I'm up with the guy, and I go, you know, want a popcorn and a Coke and, you know, this and that and whatever. And he's like, okay, thanks a lot, sir. And I give him the money, and he gives me my check. Thank you. I hope you have hope you enjoy your movie, sir. And I'm like, thanks. And I'm thinking, what's the matter with him? I walk away, and my wife goes, did you get such and such? And I go, oh, I forgot. She goes, I'll go get it. She goes up to the guy, and the guy goes, can you put in a good word for me with him? She goes, I'm sorry? He goes, isn't that Joel Weinkopf, the guy that makes all the movies around here? Can you put in a good word? Because I'm an actor, and I'm trying to... She comes back and tells me this. Like, are you kidding me? She goes, no, he was, like, dead serious. He recognized you from the movie.
Aww.
And those things that are just cool. So cool. One time I walked into a store, Suncoast Motion Picture Store, in the Palm Beach Mall, and this was back in early 90... Well, Creep was 95, so it must have been, like, 98. And I had Creeps on my T-shirt, a picture that I shot with my son, David, when I was in South Carolina. And I walk into the store, and the guy goes, Creeps, that's my favorite movie. And he looks up at my face, and he goes, oh, my God, you're the Creep, the Creeps in my store. And then he went outside the little storefront into the interior of the Palm Beach Mall, and he starts yelling. He's going, everybody come to my store, the Creep is in my store. I went with a buddy of mine, Jason LaCorey. We were going to one of his movies because Jason had me playing in one of his movies called Reaps. And we were just talking about it. And he goes, you ever get recognized? And I'm going, yeah. And I told him a couple of the stories. And I go, you? And he goes, yeah, every once in a while someone will say, aren't you the guy that made, you know, All Wrapped Up or this movie or that movie? And I go, pretty cool. I said, but it just doesn't happen enough, Jason. He goes, yeah, I agree, Joel. We open up the doors, get out, there's an actor there, Joel Weinkopf's here! He had no idea I was coming, but he recognized me.
Aww.
I looked at Jason and I go, unbelievable, we were just talking about that.
That is so cool.
Yeah, so those make up for the times where you're just not making a whole lot of money at this. You know, people are like, I remember one time wearing my Truth at Air shirt on the route when I worked for Crystal Water back in over in Fort Pierce, and I was out in Okeechobee on the route, and then one guy goes, oh, nice jacket, what is that? And I go, ah, it's Truth at Air. And he goes, what's Truth at Air? And I go, well, it's a movie I was in. You were in a movie? And I go, yeah. He goes, why are you working for the water company? And I go, yeah, that's what I'm wondering. I go, you know why? Because just because you're in a movie doesn't mean you're freaking Tom Cruise until you get to Tom Cruise level. I'm far from it.
Yeah, you got to work a day job, as they
yeah.
say.
But well, now, fortunately, I'm able to just, I can just do the movies and stuff like that. But back then, no, I'm driving a truck and I had to drive to Okeechobee. And when I was, and I'm still writing the book, and I'm terrible at, you know, really sitting down and writing. But I said the end of that book was going to be, if you ever want to see me, look for that big fluorescent green Crystal Water truck driving down the road. But even Crystal Water, I left that back in 2008 because I was scheduled for a movie in Indiana and then a movie in Iowa, and then I had one in Lakeland, and then the Uh-Oh Show came up, and then Jason LaCourie had his movie Stop Dead with Debbie Rashan, and I had all these things going on. So I said, man, I got to quit my job. And I gave him my 2-week notice, and I left, and I did the Uh-Oh Show, and I did the gig in Indiana. I did one in Iowa, and I did Jason LaCourie's movie Stop Dead, and then everything just stopped, and then I was like, oh my God, I'm not getting any work. So it's been sporadic. And yes, and if you're not working, you have to make your own stuff. So that's why I do my own movies too. I produce my own stuff, because you can't, I mean, you can just sit around and wait for someone to call you and go, hey man, you want to be in my movie? But that doesn't happen very too often. But the last one I did, I said, was I think for Todd Sheets, when he flew me out to Missouri to do his movie. And but yeah, when nothing else is going on, it's kind of like you gotta make your own way. You can't sit around and wait. You gotta say, okay, well, I guess I'm just gonna produce my own movie, and I'm gonna write it and direct it and produce it and star in it, and I'll get actors to come in and then just do your own, and then get the stuff out there so people can continue to see you.
Well, yeah, and with producing it yourself, you got a lot more control.
Yeah.
Than what you would if you were just, and I use that term loosely, just the actor. Because I know actors
yeah.
work hard.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I was just agreeing with you. I was saying absolutely.
Okay, yeah, they got bad sound on Blog Talk Radio. So one thing that I wanted to ask you, and you've probably been asked it a lot, but it's a two-part question. How do you like being called the king of the B-movies? And about when did that start?
That started in 1996. Alternative Cinema did a article on me. What I think I had done Lost Faith, but also Alien Agenda, Endangered Species, Alien Agenda, Out of the Darkness, I think it was, with Sacha Grand. This is all for Kevin Lindemuth. And then I think they just rolled the other movies in, and then I just kind of got that name, King of the B-Movies, because I'd done so many movies in a short amount of time. And, so when I got that, I thought it was kind of cool to be, you know, like, oh, okay. And then there's other people that are like, dude, the King of the B-Movies is an insult because you don't want to make B-Movies, you want to make A-Movies. But I don't know if that A-movie will ever come. So I'm fine with it. So when people say, hey, King of the B-Movies, my nephew made me a huge banner that said King of the B-Movies, and with that the Alternative Cinema magazine, getting it in there, and then I was on the front cover of their the magazine. And so that was all cool. And then it's nothing that I go, hey, blah, blah, whatever. It's people have picked up on that, and that's just kind of what I got known as. So when someone says it, they say, hey, Joel, I'm the King of the B-Movies. There's lots of people being called King of the B-Movies. There's Roger Corman is your number one.
Oh, well, yeah.
Yeah, there's a guy out in L.A., I can't remember his name now, but he's called King of the B-Movies. Tim Ritter, King of the B-Movies. He's called King of the B-Movies.
Yeah.
So it's not like specific, like Michael Jackson. He's the King of the Pop. I don't think there's any other musician that goes around saying or called the King of Pop, because that was Michael Jackson. But in this case,
right.
King of the B-Movies, it's pretty much anybody that is making these B-Movies, and they do a lot of them. And I can say, well, yeah, I've done a lot of, you know, B-Movies. So that's where that all generated from, Alternative Cinema.
Well, there are lots of kings all over the world, so there's nothing wrong with there being more than one king of the B movies.
Well, it's kind of, you go to a show, or like even you, like you put up, you said, hey, listen to Joel Ankin tonight, King of the B movies. It's just kind of, I don't know, it's kind of cool. It's better to be King of the B movies than Jerk to South Florida or something like that. You get a pretty good title, stick with it.
You're funny. So aren't you a cartoonist? I know the answer to this, but it's for the people listening. Aren't you a cartoonist as well?
Yeah, but lately I was looking at it because I shot a scene, and it was with L.D. Blevins and Bob Glazer. They're playing older versions of two superheroes I created called Sonic Man and Ray Blast. And they're comic book characters I made up in my high school days, of, you know, from 75 to 79. And my character was Ray Blast. He was a superhero, and he had an orange and black costume, and he fought with, you know, I crossed over Marvel and DC worlds and stuff. I fought with Spider-Man and got beat up by the Hulk. And my buddy Richard Rauch became Sonic Man. So, yeah, I drew these whole comic books, and then I put the posters on the wall because I wanted to cut some close-ups in for the Craigline incident in Bob Glazer's scene and L.D. Blevins. And I get up in the morning, and I was kind of looking at it in the last few weeks, and I flash back to when I met, I'm trying to remember his name. He did the X-Men, and all of a sudden Dave Cockrum. And I met him at a comic convention. This is in the 80s. And I was really excited about meeting him. My friend Richard Rauch, he was with me. And I go, oh, I can't believe I'm going to meet Dave Cockrum. He's like, settle down. And Kirk Allen was there, who was Superman. I was so excited to meet Superman to the point where I was like, I forgot my name. I turned to Richard, and I go, what's my name again? He goes, oh, shut up, man. Not that big a deal. So I met Dave Cockrum, and I said, hey, Mr. Cockrum. And he did Nightcrawler and Wolverine and everybody. And I said, Mr. Cockrum, if I draw something, can you know, do you look at it and tell me, you know, what you think? He goes, yeah, I'll either tell you it's good or that it's a piece of shit. And I went, oh, okay. So I didn't expect him to talk to me like that. And I went, and he was right next to Nordell, who used to do the Green Lantern, the Golden Age Green Lantern. He was sitting right next to him. So I go out, I do a kind of a quick sketch, and it's rough and everything. And I remember some little kid came up watching me, goes, wow, Dad, look at that. That's really good. And I thought, oh, that's nice to hear from the kid. So I go stand in the damn line again till I get all the way back up to Dave Cockrum. And I go, hey, Mr. Cockrum, I drew that picture. I was asking if you'd take a look at it. He goes, let me have a look at it. And he snatches it out of my hand, and he looks at it, and he goes, what do you want me to say? You need a lot of help in anatomy. This is horrible. This is the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. Nordell, take a look at this. And he hands it to Nordell. Nordell goes, what are all these lines? What are all these lines? What is all these lines? What are these lines? And I go, I don't know. I said, that's kind of my style to put the lines in there. Kind of like Carmen Infantino does the Flash. Oh, are you trying to say that you're as good as Carmen Infantino? And I go, oh, my God, no. Look, I'm just trying to show you my picture. This is horrible. Get it out of here. And I'm like, man, what is the matter with you? Can you be any more shitty to me? So I look up at the poster on my wall, my Force 9 poster that I use in the movie, and I look at it and I go, God, my anatomy is pretty bad. But people, they buy the comics and they enjoy that, and they know, I have a friend of mine, Austin Janowski, he does Iron Man for Marvel Comics, and he did Batman, he did a whole bunch of comic characters, and he was nice. He wasn't like Dave Cockrum. He looked at it and he goes, yeah, this shows some talent here, Joel. This is good because he's being a nice guy. But Dave Cockrum was, and then the hardest thing was when I was telling the Marvel artist at another convention, I was there telling him about it, and they were like, Dave Cockrum died. And I go, oh, shit, I am so sorry, man. I did. He had a heart attack. I go, I didn't know. I apologize. I, you know, it was so cool for me to meet him. But that was my greeting back, was just, this is your anatomy sucks. You've got to learn how to draw people. So, yeah, so I still cartoon. I still draw. I've done, like, 9. Well, the Ray Blast books go way back to the 70s, and I've got them all. But the ones that I actually, you know, published myself were I think, the last five Ray Blast issues. And I even got a desist order from Marvel and DC. They were like, you can't. you know, you can't use Spider-Man and you can't use the Hulk and you can't use Superman. And I knew that. I didn't think it was going to be a big deal, but they're like, just, you got to stop doing this. And I was like, okay, I won't do that anymore. If I do it, if I go to publish again with someone else, I'll change all those characters. I'll change the Hulk to somebody else. And I had Spider-Man showed up to help, and I said, I got to replace Spidey, and I can't use Nova. But, yeah, so I do the cartooning, too, and it's fun to do that. But I haven't really, like, the ones that I drew for the comic, those things were pulled out of the from the 70s and late 80s that I actually reproduced and put it into a comic book style, you know, where it's got a binding on it, and then, you know, I sold those. But I haven't really done a lot of cartooning since then. They're just, that's just stuff kind of out there. Or if I send something out in the mail, I'll still draw Spider-Man on it or something.
Well, that's something that's really interesting, though. I love cartoons. And even if it's something that some people think, oh, that looks bad. Well, look at Mad Magazine. It wasn't like they were really good artists or anything, but it wasn't really the art itself. It was the story that went with it that made it. So,
yeah,
you know, I love that.
And how they do their characters. We did a convention over at Daytona, and I can't remember his name now, but I told Kathy, I go, honey, that's the dude that did Mad Magazine way back in the 70s and stuff. And I got out and talked to him, and I said, man, I collected your magazines, and my brother did back in the day. And he's like, oh, yeah, and met him, introduced myself, and we got to be, you know, friends and talking and stuff, and then we were across from each other at the con, and that's the one thing you just remember. You're just like, that's the guy that did Mad Magazine. He did all those, you know, Captain Klutz and all that stuff, and all those are great.
Well, changing the subject, since you mentioned Kathy, your beautiful wife, which came first? You're putting her in a movie or marrying her and then putting her in a movie?
Actually, we met on a trip. I was over here to Tampa and I was working on a movie. It didn't have a title yet, but the title would become Fall of an Actor. And we were shooting the scene and she was there because her friend, Walter, was in the movie also. And she happened to be on set. She was very interested in movies, and she was like, she had been to New York at some of the schools there for acting, and she always wanted to do this. So she was there the whole time where, you know, that's Garland and Walter and her and I think Raymond Kudo and Warren Madden and all these people were to work on this movie. And Garland had said, hey, why don't you come in and sing with Kathy and play your girlfriend? And I go, okay, that's okay with me. And he goes, maybe you guys can kiss at the door or something before you go in. And I go, it's okay with me if it's okay with her. And she's like, I'm okay with that. And I go, okay. So we kissed, and that's in Fall of an Actor. That's the very first time we ever kissed, is in that movie, Fall of an Actor.
Aw.
And
did you feel it then?
What's that?
Did you feel it then with that first kiss that she might be somebody that you might want to marry someday?
Yeah, I think so. Very much so. Because I knew it was just, like Garland, like I said, Garland Hewlett, he said, maybe Kathy can play your girlfriend, and, you know, you're going in the door, but she's got to leave, and so she kisses you goodbye, and I was just like, I'm okay with that. And then we did, there was that kind of touch, like, you know, like once you kiss, you're like, oh, hey, what's going on here? So, you know, yeah, absolutely. But the neatest thing is, that was our first kiss, and it was captured, you know, on video. What did we shoot? We shot that on, I don't know what we shot that. It was shot on 8mm. No, it wasn't 8mm. It was like high 8, I think. But, the first, you see us kiss in Fall of an Actor, that's actually the first time we ever, ever kissed in our lives. And then it was a little while longer before we were actually seeing each other, and then of course eventually we did get married, but it kind of all started on a little movie that didn't have a name that became Fall of an Actor.
Aww, right. Nice story. That's really nice. It's sweet. So you're a fan of Star Trek, the original series, right?
Yeah, and I saw your banner. I said, oh, that's cool, because Cheryl's got the banner up there, but yeah, no, the original series, of course, Star Trek with Kirk, But then I did like Next Gen. At first, I didn't know if I was going to like Next Generation. I was like, oh, this is going to suck. They shouldn't do this. But I was there for the first night it came out, and I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. And then, of course, everything else I followed, even though we're Enterprise, I didn't care for. And then, of course, Deep Space Nine, Voyager. And then Enterprise came along, and I didn't quite – I was whatever with Enterprise because they weren't paying attention to anything that Roddenberry done, like putting Klingons on Earth. And I'm like, I'm always like, well, let me try and get past that and say it's an alternate world, and then I'll be okay. And then they brought the Borg in, and I'm like, the Borg weren't there yet. And I'm like, okay, let me try and accept that the Borg were here before Kirk even. I'll try and accept that. So even Enterprise, and then Discovery I haven't seen, but I'll probably just buy that when it comes out on DVD. I think it's out on DVD now, but Enterprise. And then, of course, Picard, I'd like to see that because it's got Seven of Nine in it and Data's in it. So, yeah, a big fan of the whole Star Trek universe. And J.J. Abrams, when he came out, I was like, ah, what's he going to do with this? And so many people were mad. They're like, that didn't happen. It's not like that. And I was even trying to explain. But people don't want to listen. They just want to keep yelling at you. But you go, no, it's a totally different timeline. The timeline was changed when the Romulan ship came through. The whole timeline, the whole Star Trek original series has been wiped off the board. Now you're starting fresh. And people didn't get that. They're just mad. J.J., I'm going to kill J.J. Abrams. And then I'm like, why? It's a new timeline. It's like Back to the Future. What are you getting so? It's not real. Star Trek's not real. Don't get mad.
Well, actually, as somebody who doesn't like those movies, I can actually say that for most of us, it's not that we expect it to be like the other universe and that it's not supposed to be the same thing. We get that it's supposed to be an alternate universe. They're just crappy movies.
The Star Trek, J.J. Abrams, the first one, and my friend Joel Harlow, who did my makeup on Killing Spree, he won an Oscar for all the aliens because he did all the aliens. And he got an Oscar for it. So it was very cool to watch him on the Oscars up there on stage. And I'm going, that's Joel Harlow. He did my makeup on Killing Spree. And he did our copper mask, killer mask for Truth or Dare. The first one, I thought it was awesome, but I didn't care for Into the Darkness because it was just a ripoff of Wrath of Khan, but they put Spock in the place instead of, Kirk in the place instead of Spock. And then the next one, I really didn't care for the next one. But the first one was straight on her. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well, and see, we can agree to disagree. But some people, they're not like that. They want to argue. I don't want to argue. I just, I didn't like it because, not because, oh, that's not Kirk or, oh, that's not Spock. I know they're in an alternate universe. I don't care. I just look at the movie and I know whether I like it or not. And I didn't like it as a whole. I'm not saying there weren't things in it that weren't enjoyable. It wasn't like a total loss. But when I look at the whole picture, I didn't like it. Let me put it this way.
Yeah.
I've watched movies of yours 2 and 3 times. And
you're right.
I've only watched that Star Trek from 2009. I've only watched that once. So that says a lot right there, because when I like a movie, I'll watch it over and over and over again. And if I only want to watch something, if I only want to watch something once, there, unless it's a movie like Schindler's List, because that was an exceptionally good movie. However, it was so gut-wrenching that I wouldn't be able to watch it a second time.
Right.
Those are rarities of that kind of thing, why I wouldn't watch it twice. Usually, if I'm not watching it twice, it's because it's a crappy movie.
I agree. I've got movies where I'm going, I'm not going to sit through that again. I did not care for Kathy and I went to see, what's the zombie movie? Part 2. Zombieland 2. Oh my! I sat next to Kathy, and she goes, "Honey, would you please just shut up?" Because I just kept sitting there going, "Oh my God, the movie's not over yet," and I just kept saying that through the whole. She's like, "Would you shut up?" And I go, "I'm sorry, but What would he say that for? This is terrible. Why is this movie on a big screen and Lost Faith is not? Why? Why is this happening? I like the first one. I'm like, who wrote this? A 4-year? I could write better than him. It just happened. So I'm like, I would never watch Zombieland 2 again. Never. But then, of course, there's other movies. Star Trek, I'd watch again. Dawn of the Dead, I could watch that all the time. The George Romero one, and never get bored of it, but I don't want to watch the remake or the reimagining of it. I didn't like that one. I stopped in the theater. Kathy and I went and seen the reimagining of Dawn of the Dead, and it got over. And I do this. I'll just go up to people. And I went up to this one guy, and I go, what'd you think of the movie? He goes, yeah, it's pretty good. And I go, what'd you think of the original one? He goes, the original one? And I go, oh, my God, don't tell me you don't know about George Romero's Dawn of the Dead. And he's like, who's George Romero? I go, you go to Blockbuster right now and get Dawn of the Dead by George Romero. Well, who is it? Don't ask me that again. You're making my blood pressure raise. Just go to Blockbuster and rent Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah, I don't get that, how somebody wouldn't know who George Romero is. Yeah, Dawn of the Dead. Now, the reimagining you're talking about, are you talking about the one in the 90s?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one was, it wasn't, it yeah. wasn't, or wait a minute, no, or was it in 2004, I think, the Dawn of the Dead?
Yeah, 2004. They're still in a shopping mall, but it wasn't the same thing.
Right. It was okay. But like you say, it wasn't the same. It just was okay. It just would have been better if they would have called it something else and put it someplace else. And it just would have been better not even calling it Dawn of the Dead. And then it would have been okay.
Right. They should have just made the zombie movie.
Yeah. And they got tons of them, so it doesn't matter what zombie you call it. I mean, the zombie everything. I've seen so many zombie movies.
And yeah, absolutely.
Really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm maybe like a sort of connoisseur of movies, but I'm not so highfalutin that I can't enjoy like a movie that really is not all that great, but yet there's things about it that make it really good. Because I've seen movies that had such low budgets that they were terrible, but yet there was something about them, whether it was the acting was good or the special effects were good or the fight scenes were good, you know, anything like that. And it just makes it to where, well, you know what, that's not that bad. And then on the other hand, you've got these multi-million dollar projects coming out of Hollywood. And you watch them and go, this is a piece of crap.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter to me how much somebody spends on making their movie.
I always say that the thing is I would rather something, I'd rather watch something cool and the quality not, because a lot of filmmakers, they'll go to you and they'll go, I'm shooting in 8K on the Red Duo Max. Crystal clear, it's so clear, it looks so good, it's so clear, what do you think? It is crystal clear, the movie was stupid. I'd rather watch something shot on Super 8 like Leif Chonker's Darkness and go, man, that was cool, and accept the little flaws of the, because I want to see a cool storyline. I really don't care that it was shot on the red and it was shot 8K, and it looks nice and it looks beautiful. That's fine and dandy. But one time I was at a friend's house and she had one of those TVs and I go, I'm not enjoying this movie because it looks like a soap opera to me. It's like I can take my hand and stick it through the television set and grab the guy's shoulder. And it was an action shoot 'em up type movie that I love. And I go, I can't enjoy it on this. It's too clear for me. I mean, maybe that's just me. So, but when it all comes down to it, I want to have some kind of cool little story. That I can watch. I mean, look at Evil Dead, where a lot of people would just put down Evil Dead. Oh, that's a piece of crap. But the storyline is cool with the raising of the demons and everything. And then Evil Dead is the one that trended that thing, really, where people just kind of, you know, copied it. And they did an episode of Supernatural. And a lot of movies were done like that, where they, you know, either they mention the words or they play a tape recorder and it brings up the evil. And so to me, you know, when people go, well, let's do Super 8, blah, 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 I go, yeah, but it was cool. And like I said, Leaf Junker's Darkness was all on Super 8. I kind of like but I also love, you know, I love Hollywood movies. I love all Chuck Norris movies. And so I like all them, but there'll always be a place for when instead of people just saying like, well, these are Hollywood movies and B movies suck, don't watch them. I can still, you know, go back and forth and saying, yeah, I want to watch a Hollywood movie. Like I want to see Independence Day, but then I can also sit there and, you know, watch a B movie too at the same time. It's something that's not got the millions of dollars behind it.
Well, yeah, because there's all different kinds of things, like I said, about what makes a movie. It doesn't even necessarily have to be good per se, just enjoyable. And the main thing is if it has a good story. And then next comes the acting, because if it's got a good story and the acting is really atrocious, then I get to where I'm like, oh, I want to turn it off.
Yeah.
So the acting is at least got to be so-so. Maybe not necessarily really, really good, but as long as it's so-so. So we've got only like 6 minutes left that I'm allowed. So
okay.
I wanted to ask you about this one because I like Jekyll and Hyde. Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. So I had seen that you're finishing up, you're in post-production, I think, of Jekyll versus Hyde. So do you have a special spin on that?
Yeah, a special what?
Like a special spin. You know, like Dr. Jekyll and Sister.
Yeah, Jekyll and Hyde because I don't want to say. Well, yeah, it's in public domain. So anybody can make a Jekyll and Hyde movie. This is their version of it. This is with Dustin Hubbard and Kai and Subgodden and Kai Hornick. So it's a different take on it. He's still kind of like got this personality where he becomes, of course, the Mr. Hyde, and still, you know, the nice persona of Jekyll. But they put it into like he's in a wheelchair and he's doing experiments, and I'm his, like, I don't know what I'm called, like the Jew boy or something, the manservant. And so I'm there actually when the I don't want to give anything away because it's coming out soon, but there's a part where the police come to arrest him, and I stand in the way between the police and myself. And the police officers are played by Bob Glaser and Pete Gerard. And they did an awesome job on that. And, of course, Kai's in it, too, as Hyde. And but, yeah, so that's going to be really cool. I'm anxious for that to come out. Like Animator just come out from Wild Eye, and now Jekyll vs. Hyde is going to come out from Wild Eye. It's due out in September, I believe.
Well, I'll be interested in that because I like I don't think I've ever seen a bad Jekyll Hyde thing because that Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde that I mentioned, I really liked that one because it was different because Hyde was a woman, you know.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, so there's only a couple minutes left, so do you want to tell people how they can get in contact with you if they want to ask you questions or maybe try to be in one of your movies, whatever?
Well, yeah, because I'm doing one now. It's called The Craigline Incident, and I got to mention some people because I told them I would. But I got, like, the talented Ian Stevens is going to be in it. I got Eric Danger D's in it. Kate Fenix is in it. Bob Glaser, L.D. Blevins, Terry Hopkins, Sean C. Phillips, Phil Herman, Anthony Ruiz, my wife Kathy, Winecoop, Warren Madden, Walter Maceda, Peter Terzian, Rick Danford, Clayton Griffin, Les McDowell. We just shot at his Wild West town. And Johan Tetrolf is kind of making his comeback to the movies. So, now these are all the people that are involved with the Craigline Incident that are going to be in it now. And then all the people I've worked with is just such a variety, like Jason LaCourie, Jason Fink, Marcus Kempton, Warner Jock, Tim Ritter, Ron Bonk, Derek Fricosa. And it just goes on and on and on because when it used to be you just do one movie and, okay, you name six people. But I've done so many that your lives crisscross all over the place, so... If somebody wants to get in touch with me, they just look me up on Facebook. I'm on there just as Joel D. Winecoop, And, yeah, I put a lot of people in movies. They contact me, and they go, hey, Mr. Weinkoff, can I be in a movie? And I'm like, yeah, can you do this? Okay, you're in. Simple as that. That's how you get a part in a movie. Just ask. So, yeah, so if they're interested, they can contact me on Facebook.
Well, that's good to know. So I'll pass that on my Facebook, and plus hopefully people will hear it on here. We've got a little bit over 2 minutes. Is there anything in closing that you want to talk about or to say?
No, that's pretty much the end. I mean, if somebody out there wants to make a movie, don't let anybody tell you that you can't do it. Just grab your camera and start get some friends that are like-minded and just start doing stuff. And don't. I had a guy tell me a long time ago when we first were going to do Twisted Illusions, I had done the Barnes House of Horrors with him, and I told him, his name was Larry Silver, and he goes, you can't do this. You can't make a movie. And I go, why not? He goes, you just can't make a movie. You can't make a movie. And I go, well, I'm going to make one anyway. You know, so there's always somebody there to tell you that you can't do something. So just do it anyway.
Since you said that, I wanted to ask you, have you seen that guy since? Because he told you, oh, you can't make a movie, and you've made 168 of them.
Yeah, I know. I really wish I could. That was Larry, and he lives over, and it was in the Stewart area where I did the Barnes House before. I should try and find him on Facebook and say that to him. Say, remember me? You said I wouldn't do a movie. I've done 168. What have you done?
Okay. Yeah, there's only like a little bit over a minute. So, and unless you have something else to say, I'll probably just close it out then.
If anybody wants to get in touch with me, they can get in touch with me on. I hope we had somebody listening tonight. I hope people liked it. And other than that, thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah, thank you for being on. Sometimes you can't even tell if people are listening because I know that I've listened to other people's shows, but yet I'm not showing up as having listened to it.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So I know that sometimes that happens. So, okay.
Well, they can
do
reruns,
too.
Well, you got reruns, too. When people can't see it, listen to it live, they can listen to it, like, later on.
Right. Okay, well, now there's only, like, 20 seconds. So I am going to say thank you, Joel D. Weinkoop, for being on my show. You were very entertaining. And I hope that you and your beautiful wife make some more good movies. Thank you.
Well, thank you very, very much. And I guess you'll be talking to my wife shortly.
Yes. In a few
Monday
days,
night.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, good night.
All right, good night, and thank you.
Thank you, good night.
Good night.
Okay, we're off the air, but I think I'm still on the phone. Okay, I'm going to call now.